We have stopped this session for 3 weeks already, I think, right? About 3 weeks. The reason why we stopped for 3 weeks is because we have an activity going on, which is the novice monk ordination for about 12 days. 7 days is the ordination, and a few days preparations and ending. So I have been talking about this off and on, and I myself lose track of it. But then it's always good to review it back again. This is something that I always mention in my previous lectures, but consciousness only is only mentioned sporadically, so not all the time. I plan to do a detailed course in giving out information of the Yogacara school. So let's start from the very beginning again, and our purpose is to make sure that we really understand the Yogacara approach, the Yogacara school of Buddhism, which is one of the Mahayana school, which is absolutely important because this is the school that is very philosophical, academic in nature, and also very practical. It studies the psychology of consciousness, the psychology of the mind. Yogacara, Sanskrit, is application of yoga. Yoga is always in harmony, the harmony of the body and mind, harmony of body and mind with nature, with the universe. Also known as Vijnanavada. It's a Sanskrit word, the school that teaches knowing, the school that teaches knowing. Also known as Vijnanamatra. Vijnanamatra in Sanskrit word is consciousness only. Weishi Xue Pai. Also known as Chittamatra, mind only. Because consciousness is Chitta, which is tainted, polluted, not the pure consciousness. This school of Mahayana Buddhism teaches that the reality we think, we perceive, have no reality in themselves. There is no real experience, neither is there any reality in what is being experienced. This is just a process of the mind. Of course, this is just a simple explanation on Yogacara. From now on, I will use the word Yogacara. It's the same as Vijnanavada, is the same as Vijnanamatra, is the same as Chittamatra. But I will be using Yogacara. I don't have to repeat all these words that are quite similar. This school concentrates on consciousness. What is it that knows? Who knows? What is it who knows? Is it the person? Is this a sentient being? What is it that exactly knows what's going on in the surrounding? The knowing is explained by the 8 consciousnesses. Through complete understanding of consciousness, we can practice the Yogacara contemplation to transform the 8 consciousnesses into enlightened wisdom. So, this school of thought studies what is it that knows? Who knows? And if we know, if the sentient being knows, the knowing is explained by the 8 consciousnesses of the Yogacara school. And through complete understanding of consciousness, of the 8 consciousnesses, we can practice the Yogacara contemplation. Weishiguan. The Yogacara contemplation, there are 5 procedures of Yogacara contemplation to transform the 8 consciousnesses into enlightened wisdom. When we have the enlightenment wisdom, then the Bodhi is attained. the complete enlightenment of the Bodhi has attained. This is very simplified version of what is that school, and what are the similar names for the school, and what is consciousness, and what is it that knows, and after studying this school, what's the ultimate purpose? What's the final goal of studying this school? So this is very important. What is it that knows? Who knows? Who understand the surrounding? Who understand externalities? Who understand internalities? Who understand this interaction between the sentient being and the universe? What is it that knows? It is I who knows. But then, who am I? Who am I who knows? Who am I who knows about it? Because everything is based on you knowing, the I who knows. But who am I? I am a combination of the body and mind. And then another question that comes up, how does this combination of body and mind work? So this is Yogacara. How does this combination of body and mind work? What is this body and mind? That's a sentient being. That's the sentient being, you and I. You have a body and mind, I have a body and mind. A dog has a body and mind. An elephant has a body and mind. So it's a combination of body and mind. If we find out how our body and mind works, the sutra says, there's not a molecule in this universe that you don't understand, because it works the same way. And I would like to review very briefly on what I have been talking about for many, many weeks. What exactly is this body and mind? A general picture of what this body and mind is. So this body is made up of, on the front end, your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue. That's your sensory organs. On the inside, there's the hair, the bodily hair, the nails, the teeth, skin, flesh, veins, bone structure, liquid in bone, kidneys, heart, liver, bladder, spleen, lungs, etc., etc. Gall, phlegm, plus blood, sweat, bladder, tears, synovia, spit, mucus, marrow, and urine. We call it the 36 parts of the body, the inside and the outside. Why does the sutra particularly would like to bring out the front end? Why do they include eyes, ears, nose, tongue into here? It's because that's the externalities, that's the organs that sense the outside. So sutras particularly pay attention to pointing out all these sensory organs on the outside, on the front windows, because they are the salesman, the sales lady of you. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, those are the front end sales that interact with externalities. So that's why the Buddha pay particular attention to pointing you out, that you should know all this front-end salesman and sales lady of you, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the tongue, because they are interacting with the outside world. Your internal organs, your heart, your bladder, your liquid inside, is only internal reaction, internally. Without externalities, you cannot contact the outside world. Imagine if you don't have eyes, you don't have nose, you don't have ears, you cannot interact with the outside world. You can only interact with your own mind inside. But a normal person will have all these external sensory organs. And these sensory organs are responsible for linking your internal body, your brain, your mind, with the external world. That's the reason why the body must succinctly, clearly, in detail, pointing them out to you, so that you know how you interact, how your relationship gets set up with the universe, your relationship with all sentient beings. The mind is something that you cannot see. The brain you can see, the physical part of it. How can you see your thought? Your perception, your conception, volition and consciousness, that's only you can feel it. Nobody can see how you think. We only can see your externalities. All these we can see. We can see your eyes and nose, the tongue, and all this bodily hair. If you do an operation, the doctor can see everything in your body, but the doctor cannot see your thought. The doctor cannot see your perception, your volition, your analysis in your mind. That cannot be seen. That can only be felt. That kind of sensation can only be felt by yourself, the subject. There's always the subject and the object. The subject is interacting with the object. So this is body and mind. Then if we further analyzed it, the body pertains to material, which we call physical, and the mind pertains to metaphysical. When we say meta, that means above physical, beyond physical. Physical, materialistic perspective of life that emphasizes an empirical evidence provided by the five senses, what can be literally seen, heard, tasted, touched, or smelled. You have empirical evidence to support the physical part of you, of I. And the metaphysical part is the spiritual part, spiritual perspective that goes beyond what is perceptible to the senses. It concerns the nature of the mind and its relationship to existence, time, and space. So if you want to know Buddhism, you really have to start from scratch in knowing who you are. Not just say, Buddha is my God, I just believe in God, and that's it. The Buddha say no. You have to understand your relationship with the universe, your relationship among yourself. You have to give questions. You have to question what is surrounding you so that you know exactly how to emancipate yourself from the bondage of the body and mind. Well, we live in a bondage of body and mind. In other words, we live in our own prison of body and mind, yet we don't know about it. Every individual's prison becomes a comfort zone for that individual. And he's been living in it, and he does not know anything about the outside world until you are told that you should analyze what is outside. Buddhism is exactly doing that, analyzing you as a sentient being, how you know the universe, and your relationship with others. Understand how you've been going through this samsara of life and death. How do you go beyond life and death? Get out from the samsara. Get out from this bondage of body and mind. We're so comfortable in our bondage that we don't even know that we're in suffering. That bondage is intrinsic in suffering. This is a world of suffering. Of course, we have temporary pleasure in the suffering, but ultimately, life is suffering. How can you say that life is not suffering if you have to go through aging, sickness, and death? Do you want to go beyond sickness, beyond aging, and beyond death? You have to go beyond that bondage of body and mind. I remember when I studied the history of Europe, there was a philosopher. He said, people told me we're living in a free world, but I can see people in chains everywhere. You don't see those chains. You think you're free. You're looking for democracy. You think you're free. Even if you have democracy, you're not free. You're not free from that bondage internally. So I see people everywhere looking for democracy, looking for freedom, but I can see everybody's in chain. Why did they see that way? Because we have that bondage inside, and we've been looking at outside. How can we achieve by looking outside? We have to look at inside first to make that achievement. So this is something basic that we really have to understand if we want to study Buddhism. It's not about blessings from Buddha. Oh, Buddha, give me the blessings of longevity. Give me the blessings of what I want. I want this, I want that. I want peace of mind. Buddha, please give me peace of mind. You are living in the bondage of acquisition. You always want to acquire more and more and more. You're living in the world of desire. You always want to desire more and more. You're living we are living in a world in which we say the Buddha will give us blessings, God will give us blessings, God will forgive all the sins that we have done. And Buddha will emancipate us from this world of sins. You have to get it out yourself. Nobody can pull you out. You have to walk out from that prison. Nobody can. If Buddha can just take you out from prison, he already have done so. You don't have to ask. Buddha is so merciful. God is so merciful that if anybody, any prisoner is in prison, and if he has the power to take you out from prison, he would have done it without you asking. Why do you have to ask, God, get me out from prison? No, you don't have to. You don't have to ask mom. If mom knows you are suffering in prison, mom would have saved you already. You don't have to ask every day, mom, please save me from prison. Because mom is so motherly, so much full of maternal love, that he would have done you without you asking. You have to do it yourself. Walk out from that comfort prison. So this is the basic that we have to understand. It contains so much about material, about spiritual. We live in the material. We also have this spiritual. We always want to acquire material. That's why we always get messed up with the world. You have to concentrate in your spiritual so that you can get out. Because the material is responsible for reincarnation, samsara, life and death. We're always from one life to the next life. One life you're Janet, next life you're John, the next life you're Bill, next life you always roll in samsara with your karma. What you have done, what you have thought, you always roll in samsara and suffering in samsara. Descartes said that I think, therefore I am. And I is a combination of body and mind. How does this work out? Remember I said sensory organs, your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, these are particularly pointed out by the Buddha because these are the sensory organs that get you connected to the outside world. The body here includes all the internal of you, the internal organs. This is a conglomerate, say, body. It includes everything. So your eyes, it's a subject, see the objects, then you have vision, eyes. Your ears, listen to sound, you have audition, your ears. So eyes consciousness, ear consciousness. Your nose smell, olfaction consciousness, the nose consciousness. Your tongue taste, you have a taste consciousness. You have this four consciousness created as a result of your sensory organs getting in contact with all these objects. The object, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. The body is the touch. Your body touches the external. Your body, internal organs, touches each other and doing all these circulations and movements, nourishments, and all that is all touches. It's all interactions, touches. But that's the bodily part. And in the process of the sensory organs interacting with the objects, all this consciousness are created. When this consciousness are created, they're not just created and per se, and that's it. When this consciousness are created, they are working at the same time with your internal mental functions to carry out actions, to carry out volitions. And in the process of carrying out volitions, karma is being produced. Bad karma, wholesome karma, unwholesome karma. Say, for instance, your taste, your tongue tastes, right? Your tongue wants to taste the flesh and blood of animals. So human sentient beings kill animals for food. Your taste, your tongue wants to taste the flesh of animals. You like those delicious. You think it's delicious. So from ancient days, sentient beings started to kill animals for food. You created the karma of killing. You don't know about it. You think animals live for human beings to kill them and eat them. But you don't know you're creating karmic energy. You committed the act of killing. And when you committed this karmic energy, you can't get away with it because of causality. You kill them, and these animals are in reincarnations. They could be humans again, they could be animals again. They will be killing you in return because of the cause of causality. So we're killing each other. One life, you're a human, you are a butcher. In that life, when you are a butcher, you kill the goat for your own sake, for the sake of your customers. And your next life, you become the goat, and the goat become the human, and the goat will kill you in return. It is a loop. It's a loop of karmic energy that's revengeful. So we're responsible for every thought, every action, because that creates not just the action. Every thought creates karmic energy. That you really have to know about it. So that's the reason why you have everybody in the process of studying body and mind, you have to be very careful with every thought that originates from your mind. You should originate every thought that is wholesome. Then you're creating wholesome karmic energy. If you are creating thought that is unwholesome, you are creating unwholesome energy, karmic energy. And you will be the sufferer yourself. Other than you induce suffering to others, in the process, you are inducing back suffering. You are retributing suffering to yourself. It bounces back. Whatever you give, it bounces back to you. So when you're receiving all these mishaps, all these catastrophes, your suffering, your aging, your sickness, don't blame anybody. You created all these. It just bounced back to you. Don't blame your dad and your mom for creating, for giving birth to you, a person who is not as handsome, who is not as beautiful, who is not as healthy. It's not because of your mom and dad. It's because of all these reasons put together that you're not handsome, you're not beautiful, you're not healthy. You created your own destiny. Not God, not your mom and dad. You created your own destiny. The five skandhas, material, perception, conception, volition, consciousness. When you read sutras, they always mention the five skandhas. Actually, the five skandhas is all these combinations. So for people who read about the five skandhas, you don't know what they're talking about because you don't know how to analyze them. Now you know this is the five skandhas. It's the body and mind. Now, other than the five consciousnesses, there is also the mano consciousness, the manas consciousness, and the alaya consciousness. The mano consciousness is the sixth consciousness. That's the manager of the previous five. A very active manager that control and work in conjunction with these previous five. This is the brain part of it. It's the brain. Imagine if you don't have any brain, then how does this work? Your mano, the manager, must work, must cooperate with all these. That brings out the work. Plus, all these concerns the natural present state. Your eyes can only see the present state of being. Your eyes cannot see the past, can you? Your eyes cannot see the future. Your eyes can only see the present natural state of being. Your ears cannot listen to sounds 10 years ago or yesterday. Your ears can only listen to the sound at the present moment, that is now. For that reason, your tongue tastes the present food. Your tongue cannot taste yesterday's food. Yesterday's memory is registered with this manager, with the mano. So the mano, if I can use an analysis, a simile, the mano has a whole bunch of immeasurable bunches of files in the cabinet. Historical files, future budgets, and the present files. The present files still keep coming in. This mano also have a historical data files. So when the mano interact with eyes, ears, nose, taste, and tactile, it immediately gets to the past files and give the information out. It's like a computer. You key in the keyboard. The keyboard is at the present moment. The keyboard itself cannot refer to the past. The keyboard only deals with what your fingers at the present time keyed in. But who's responsible for the past data? The disk drive, what is inside internally. You see? So, which one is the most powerful? The disk drive. It remembers the past, it worries about the future, it yearns for the future. That disk drive, that manager, is responsible for all the good and bad things that you have done. You better watch that manager. He's pulling you down. He's getting you into trouble. He's getting you down to hell. He's getting you down to all reincarnations. He's getting you down to become an animal, to become a ghost. He's also getting you up to heaven. It depends on how you use that manager. It depends on how you train that manager. Have you been training your manager to go down hell? Or have you been training your manager to go to heaven? Or beyond heaven? Heaven is not the ultimate place to go. Heaven is a happy place. It's a place of happiness. But once that happiness is all used up because of karmic energy, you still have to go down to reincarnation. That is just a transient place that is extremely happy. But the Buddha said, you really have to go beyond heaven. Heaven is still material. You have to go beyond material. That's what we call nirvana. That's what we call sammasambuddhi. I don't know what other terms you use for it. It's just a term. That's what we call Buddhahood. It's just a term. And some people would like to call that Buddhahood God. Feel free what you want to say. It's just a word. Why do you attach to the word? This is the Buddha word. This is the God word. So this is the manager that we really have to know about it. You're not in control of your manager. You let your company go wild. You're the director. You don't care about your own company. You just let the manager do what he wants to do. You're the director. And as time goes on, you know that you are both the director and the manager. You're not distinct from the manager. You are one. You're conglomerated one. Just for the sake of convenience, I tell you that manager is not you, but you actually, you director, you are that manager. And you are not just that manager. You are your eyes, your ears, your nose, your taste, your tongue. You are one and the same thing. The Buddha wants us to study ourselves in detail. That's what we call Yogacara. That's what we call Mujjnanavada. That's what we call Vijnanavanmatrata. And then, okay, you say, okay, we have a mano, and how about this manas? The manas is our ego, that's the director. Every company has directors. What do the directors care for? or the shareholder. The shareholder only cares for the profit, for their own purpose. They don't care about customers. What do I know about customers? I only want to know the return on my shares, how much I make from my money. Ego, my ego, enhancement of my ego. You have that ego. You are also the shareholder. You are the shareholder, you are the manager, you are the salesman, you are the sales lady. You can't get away from them. You have been committing all these wholesome and unwholesome deeds. Your body is your company. Are you running your company well? Are you running your company so efficiently that you're enlightened from it? Or you're running your company downhill? So that's Manas consciousness. How about Alaya consciousness? Alaya consciousness is the whole conglomerate of whole. Say your company is ABC company. ABC company is only a register company with the registry. The registry ABC company. Assuming that the registry does not have any record, does that mean that your company does not exist? In the ancient days, there's no such thing as a registry. You still have that existence as a company. It does not matter whether you have words for the company. That existence, store all your karmic energy. That existence is responsible for creating all this karmic energy. That existence is invisible. What is invisible are only the forms. That existence includes morality. Can you see morality? You can't see morality. Morality is a performance based on a moral concept of immoral or of wholesome, unwholesome, neutral. You really can't see how wholesome it is. It's wholesome, but how wholesome? Not everything can be explained by form. That's your alaya. When a person dies, all these will not exist for the present life. It all shrinks into the alaya. It's invisible. It's going through another round of reincarnation. Have you read the book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead? The Tibetan Book of the Living? That alaya consciousness, after a person die in the 49 days, have been roaming around. You can't see it. It's invisible. Looking for chance to reincarnate, to go into the mom's womb. Here is a young man and a young woman. They're in love with each other. They have that sexual drive in them. And they bang. They get together to perform that performance that gives babies. And when that performance is done, it sparkles a light. And that alaya consciousness, when they see the light, in their previous life, they have connections, relationship with the man and the woman. They don't go without relationship. They must know each other before. And that alaya consciousness, seeing that light sparkling out, he's looking for light, the light of happiness, the light of sexual drive, the light of energy, and zoom, he swoops into that light. That light is actually the mom's womb. Boom, he's got to be the baby. And he will be born again. That's the future Janet, or Tom, or Bill, whoever you want to call it. Why did he get into that mom, dad and mom's baby? Random mom's body? They know each other before. They all related before. They have unfinished love, unfinished debt, unfinished business. That's why they group together. Some alaya consciousness zoom into there. They want debts to be repaid. These two individuals owe them something. So it becomes Janet He wants to get the mom and dad's money because they own them the money, own her the money. And some go into the moms to repay. They love the mom and dad because they want to repay their love. Some wants the love back because they were not treated properly in the previous life. So every relationship is different. Why do you love your daughter more than your son, or vice versa? Everybody has unfinished business, unfinished debts to pay. So these are the eight consciousnesses. The eight consciousnesses. In the next lecture, in the future lectures to go, I will analyze every one of these. Every one of these in detail. How does your eye consciousness get created? When your sensory organs get in contact with object, how is that consciousness created? How come you attach? How come you carry out wholesome actions, unwholesome actions? By analyzing that, you know how to get to enlightenment. You know how to transform your consciousness into enlightened wisdom. That's what the Buddha wants us to do. He wants us to understand consciousness so that we can transform the consciousness, which is polluted, tainted, into enlightened wisdom, so that we can get out from suffering. And this is going to be an advanced lecture. To some beginners, you may not be interested, but we have been talking about beginner's course for a long time. This is something that we want to enter into. This is something that if you train yourself to know, you can propagate the Dharma well, because this is all logic. If you don't know logic, you probably cannot follow what I'm going to say. If you haven't taken any course in logic, it's a little difficult, but don't underestimate yourself. You have been applying logic every day. The day that you're not applying logic could be the day that you have made some unwholesome deeds and you don't realize it. So you have to know a little bit of logic. You have to know a little bit of probabilities. Because in the world, there's so many things that you don't know the outcome. You can only use logic to lay out the probabilities of what this argument is. So you have to study the law of probabilities. And this whole world is a world of probabilities. What is the probability when you go out there, you meet someone that you know? There is.